ghost of a Nelson Mandela coming to Europe from beyond the grave to bring you Nelson Mandela's Ghostly Podcastings. Hello, my friends. It's me, Nelson Mandela. I'm okay. My legs are trapped beneath this rubble and I don't think I can lift the rocks trapping my legs, but at least my podcasting equipment is fine.
Aside from a few scratches.
So, I'm buried alive. Well, buried dead, which of course in normal circumstances is hardly noteworthy, but I suppose that this is not what you would call normal circumstances. And in all honesty, very little of my life can be described as normal circumstance. I really don't want to have to cut off my own legs. No, Nelson, you don't have to cut off your legs. I can dig my way out of this. I can't do it. I think I'm going to be sick. Dear me. You know, this is all pretty ironic. Let me tell you a story. As you know, I was already a man when my mother died whilst I was in prison in 1968, but I was just a boy of 9 years old when my father died. I had said in later life that I had always suspected that my father had died of lung disease, but the truth of his death is far, far worse. I remember being confused. I was young, but still old enough to understand what death was and how it has a habit of taking away the people you love and changing the life you had forever. My father's name was Gadla Henry Mafakaniswa Mandela, and he was a good man, fated to ill circumstances. He was a local chief and counselor to the monarch. He was appointed to the position 3 years before I was born, and as a young man, I enjoyed the privilege of being the son of a man with power and great influence. However, in 1926, when I was 8 years old, he was dismissed from his position, having been accused of corruption by a governing white magistrate. I recall him arguing with my mother, begging her to believe him that he was not corrupt, but rather had been fired for standing up to the magistrate's racism. But my mother did not believe him. Their relationship had been strained by the fact that he had taken another wife after my mother, and despite the fact that he was a cheeky polygamist with two wives previous to my mother, she felt betrayed. And when he was accused of corruption, she too felt the shame of it, and began to doubt if she even knew who he really was. Having spent so much of my life in prison, I came to understand how he must have felt. He was accused of being corrupt, and not even his own wife believed in him, and the shame of it broke him. It is perhaps for this reason that I stayed true to my convictions during my time in prison and did not let it break me. My father's health deteriorated, and eventually he took ill shortly after my 9th birthday. He tried for the longest time to hide his illness from me, but one day, in December of 1926, I was playing a tic-a-tac-a-toe and stumbled into my father's bedroom to find him furiously rubbing ointment into his genital.
Get out of here, boy!
I'm sorry, Father.
My father seemed very embarrassed. You know, come to think of it, my father had lung disease. I think that incident may have been unrelated to his illness. My childhood was a simple one. It was dominated by traditional Thembu custom and taboo, and I spent much of my youth outside with the other boys, tending herds as a cattle boy. A far cry from the presidency, I would eventually halt. It is precisely for this reason that I will never forget the day my father was visited by the local doctor.
Nelson, close the door!
My mother snapped at me, her face sick with worry.
I'm afraid there is nothing I can do.
I stood watching, very confused. I had entered the hut when my father was resting, expecting Dr. Mukwege to say that everything was going to be okay. And as my father lay on his deathbed, coughing up blood, the doctor turned to my mother and, placing a hand on her shoulder, said,
I'm a veterinary doctor, but I will pray for you.
Doctor, please!
I must go. There are animals that need me this night.
My mother burst into tears, and the doctor turned and left in a hurry, his stethoscope trailing behind him. You know, experienced as I am in the ways of love, it seems all too obvious to me that many of the arguments that I had in my relationships were not important. Winnie and I used to fight over the smallest of things, and when I was sentenced to prison, none of those things seemed important anymore. I suspect the same was true for my mother. And when my father's death was in front of us all that was left was love. She became desperate to save him, and despite the doctor's bleak prognosis, she was determined to find a cure, and find a cure she did. My mother was Noseka Nefani, daughter of Nidama of the Right Hand Horse and a member of the Amupembu clan of the Xhosa. She had returned to the Right Hand Horse to speak with my maternal grandfather Nidama and ask for his help in curing my father.
It is no small thing that you ask.
Please, father.
Do not father me, Nosekeni. I am not your father in this matter.
He is a good man.
He is a corrupt man.
Even if that were true, does he not deserve a second chance? Does he not deserve redemption?
If I do this, you will not find redemption.
Please, I beg you.
You will beg me to undo it once it has been done. But perhaps that is a lesson you must learn.
I stood in the chamber listening to them speak, confused by the ambiguity of my grandfather's words. He was a stranger to me. In my 9 years, I had seldom seen him more than a few times. He sat in his throne-like chair, holding court, covered from head to toe in fine silks, a man of wealth and power. He regarded his daughter with disdain, and I was confused by the absence of love in the words he spoke.
Please save him!
Bring him to the stone circle. It will be done at midnight, 2 days hence.
My grandfather clapped his hands and then waved my mother away with his hand. My mother bowed her head and quickly took hold of me by the hand and dragged me out of the house. Two days passed, and my father's condition got worse. He had become delirious and would shiver uncontrollably in bed whilst running a high fever. He looked like death, and on the journey to the right-hand house, I was afraid he would die. I was walking beside the cart he was led on, being pulled by our family's loyal goat, Emilio, and he rolled over and reached out to me, taking me by the arm roughly.
Holy Slasher, I am not long of this world.
Do not say this, father.
He gripped tightly on my arm.
Listen to me, boy. You must take care of your mother and sisters. Do you understand?
Yes, father.
When I am dead, you will be the man of the family. Do not fail them as I have. Protect them, holy Lassa.
He rolled over into a coughing fit, and the weight of his words caused my steps to slow, and the cart pulled ahead of me. It was some time before we finally reached the right-hand house, and by the time we did, my poor feet were exhausted. We had walked for several miles, and in 1927 Mafezo, shoes were a luxury that we were not able to afford since my father had been sacked some months earlier. Our poor goat was exhausted, so I gave him a gentle pity pat on his head.
There, there, Emilio.
My feet were raw with cuts and scrapes from our arduous journey, and as we approached the right-hand horse, the cart pulling my father ahead of me slowed to a stop. The horse itself was far grander than any home in my village. It was surrounded by burning torches and blood-red flags that gently waved in the breeze. There were several armed men outside, clad from head to toe in red robes, and I remember thinking that they looked like ninjas. Without greeting my mother, who was inconsolable as she clutched the hand of my unconscious father, they roughly grabbed hold of my father, lifting him from the cart and dragged him towards the house, his feet dragging along the dusty floor. My mother and I followed the ninjas into the house and entered in time to see them drop my father's body onto a stone slab in the center of the room. It hadn't been there on my last visit, and I remember thinking, how the hell did they get that big stone slab in here? The ninjas stood beside the stone slab, and were joined by others. All of them stood solemnly, looking towards the balcony, overlooking the entranceway to the house. After a few moments, my grandfather, also dressed as a red ninja, looked out over the parapet and grinned at me suggestively. I don't think I've ever felt so uncomfortable as I did in that moment. My grandfather disappeared momentarily and quickly re-emerged from a stairwell at the back of the room. He approached the stone slab in the center of the room and stopped suddenly. He looked at my mother, then at me, and then loudly clapped his hands.
Begin!
The doors behind us closed, and the ninjas began some sort of terrifying chant. My grandfather slowly approached my father, and suddenly, two of the ninjas held my father down. He suddenly opened his eyes and called to my mother.
Nosekine!
Godly!
My mother let go of my hand and stepped forwards to embrace my father, but my grandfather held out a hand towards my mother as she did. She stopped suddenly, as if paralyzed by my grandfather's cold stare. He slowly shook his head at her, and she stepped back, once more taking hold of my hand. Once again, my grandfather turned towards my father, before suddenly pulling an obsidian dagger from inside his cloak. My mother gasped suddenly, and I tightened my grip on her hand.
Father, no!
My grandfather quickly silenced her. My mother fell to the floor, her fall tearing her hand away from my grasp. My grandfather held the dagger high above his head, and my father began to struggle in vain, his movement restricted by the ninja pinning him to the stone slab. His eyes widened, and he turned to me and said,
"Close your eyes, holy Klakla."
I did as I was told, and closed my eyes as tight as I could. My grandfather began chanting in closer. After a few moments, I could not bear the weight any longer, and I opened my eyes to see my grandfather smiling at me with that same evil grin before he plunged the dagger into my father's chest. After my father died, my grandfather took the obsidian dagger and wiped it clean using my father's tunic. It was his favorite, and he had worn it every day over the last several weeks, just in case that had been the day he died.
"If I am to die today, I want to look my best when I meet Almighty God,"
he would say. And now, as he lay motionless on the cold stone slab, blood smeared across the arm of his favorite tunic, with a gaping wound in his chest, I felt all notions of childishness drain away from me, replaced with a rage that boiled inside of me as I watched my grandfather nonchalantly replace the dagger in its sheath. I looked down at my unconscious mother, blood trickling down her forehead, and then back at my grandfather, who without turning to look at me, said,
"Do you want to kill me, boy?"
I gritted my teeth, my fists clenched so tightly that my fingernails cut into my own hands, and charged at him. He struck me and I tumbled to the floor beside my mother. I looked up and saw him towering above me.
"Try again, boy."
I began climbing to my feet, filled with a terrible rage, and suddenly, my father suddenly gasped for air and sat up straight on the stone slab.
"Father?"
He smiled at me and then nodded at my grandfather, who nodded back solemnly. My grandfather turned to me and nodded again before turning to leave. As you will imagine, I had many questions for my father on the long trip back home, but it didn't feel like such a long journey this time. We laughed and joked as father and son, connecting in a way that we never had before. Even the goat seemed to be enjoying himself. My mother remained unconscious for much of the trip home. But when she came to find her husband stood over her, holding her hand, she smiled and tears filled her eyes.
I knew it would work!
They kissed, and I remember feeling happier than I had felt in the longest time. It's such a shame it was not to last. Over the next few weeks, everything was tickety-boo. But then my father began to change. At first, he just seemed short-tempered, and I assumed that things had just gotten back to normal. But his temper became violent and he began to beat my mother and I. Even at such a young age, I knew something was terribly wrong. My father was an honorable man, not this monster who had hurt his own family. One day, I returned home from tending the goats to find our home eerily quiet. The house was empty. The stove was boiling away, cooking what smelt like a delightful stew.
Mother?
There was no reply. I crept through the house and into the garden. I found my father in the garden, crouching over something.
Father?
He quickly turned and glared at me, his face and chest covered in blood.
Ah!
All too quickly I realized what he had done. He was crouched over poor Emilio, and he had torn out clumps of flesh from the goat before stuffing them into his mouth. I stepped back with fear, and my father growled at me like a beast. Still crouched over the goat, my father's muscles tensed as if he were about to pounce.
Dadla? Only Shasha?
My mother suddenly appeared from inside the house with my sister, carrying a tray of drinks. Once more, I heard my father's words from weeks earlier.
Protect them, Holy Shasha.
As my father lunged at us, I quickly grabbed a stone from the ground and bashed it into the back of my father's head. My father collapsed to the floor, and my mother and I collapsed into tears. My mother was in shock. At 9 years old, I had no choice but to do what needed to be done. I had tied my father's hands and feet together with some white cord I had found in his study, and as he lay unconscious beside me, I dug his grave. I don't know what my grandfather had done to him in the right-hand house, but as I dug shovelful after shovelful out of his shallow grave to be, I recalled the warning my grandfather had given my mother.
You will beg me to undo it once it has been done, but perhaps that is a lesson you must learn.
I stood over my father and looked at his motionless body.
I'm sorry this happened to your father.
I leaned over him to take hold of him by the arms, when suddenly he came alive, kicking me into the grave. He managed to tear off his gag, taking some of the flesh from his face with it, and pounced on me viciously, biting at my throat. I used every ounce of strength in my body to hold him back, his jaws snapping at me. Blood and saliva pouring onto my face. I was terrified, and as I felt my strength failing, I prayed, Lord Jesus, help me! And suddenly, my mother smashed the shovel I had been using into the back of my father's head, and he collapsed on top of me.
Jesus!
I exclaimed. Together, my mother and I buried my father. Alive? Well, I don't think he was alive. Not really. Not since my grandfather stabbed him in the right-hand horse. But he definitely wasn't dead either. My mother and I had flirted with the idea of cutting his head off to make sure he was dead. But honestly, I don't think we had it in us. So we stuffed him into a Hessian sack and buried him. I'm sorry, Father. I had to protect them, just like you said. What the? Something is digging me out. Hello? Who's there? Show yourself.
Hello, Holy Flatland.
Father?
It is good to see you, my son.
What are you doing here?
I've come to save you, my boy, and take you to your new home.
A new home? Where?
I have a little place in the city of the dead.